You're listening to WPVM LP in Asheville, North Carolina. 103.7 on your dial and streaming globally at WPVMFM.org.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Clear skies across the area as we wrap up the week. Lows going down to around 56 after reaching near 84. Mostly sunny on Saturday, the high going up to 87 with wind gusts around 20 miles per hour. A chance of showers and thunderstorms for Saturday night, lows around 46. Chance of showers on Sunday with a high near 60. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Welcome to Twice 5 Miles Radio. I'm your host, James Nave. Today I'm going solo, and I'd like to reflect on the springtime moments that we're experiencing here in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm in Western North Carolina at Lake Eden Retreat in Swannanoa, North Carolina, and I'm recording this on a bright spring morning, and I'm looking out onto the blooms and the flowers and the trees that are getting greener and greener every day. And I was reminded, looking out this morning as the sun came up and I was sipping my coffee, of a poem that I've always loved and return to very often. It reminds me so much of growing up in Western North Carolina. And it also reminds me of being alive in the nature of things, in the youthfulness of things, and how as we move through our lives, we sometimes remember them, sometimes we don't, we struggle with it. And I just love this poem so much. And I will tell you, I memorized it when I was spending a couple of weeks at a Tibetan Buddhist center in the south of France. It was a beautiful scene. There are lots of little nooks and crannies to sit, and I did just that. I sat on rocks, I sat on logs, I sat on benches, and I memorized Fern Hill. And the reason why I memorized it was because the poem itself reminded me of the environment I was in, and it also reminded me of my childhood home in Western North Carolina, out on Brevard Road. If you are listening to this show in Asheville and you drive out Brevard Road and you come to the corner of Sardis Road and Brevard Road, right in the middle of all the commercialization that's there now, you will see Sardis Methodist Church. That's the church I went to when I was a little boy. And if you look up on top of the church, you'll see a steeple. And my grandfather built that steeple. And I remember when he was doing it in the backyard. We lived about a mile from Sardis Church when I was growing up. So Fern Hill reminds me of when I was growing up. It also reminds me of when I was spending those 2 weeks at the Tibetan Buddhist Center in June 1985. That was a long time ago. So now let's turn to Fern Hill by Dylan Thomas. Now, as I was young and easy under the apple boughs, about the lilting house, and happy as the grass was green, the night above the dingle starry. Time let me hail and climb, golden in the heydays of his eyes. And honored among wagons, I was prince of the apple towns, and once below a time, I lordly had the trees and leaves trail with daisies and barley down the rivers of the windfall light. And as I was green and carefree, famous among the barns, about the happy yard and singing, as the farm was home in the sun that is young once only. Time let me play and be golden in the mercy of his means. And green and golden, I was huntsman and herdsman. The calves sang to my horn. The foxes on the hills barked clear and cold. And the Sabbath rang slowly in the pebbles of the holy streams. All the sun long it was running, it was lovely. The hayfields high as the house, the tunes from the chimneys, it was air and playing, lovely and watery and fire green as grass. And nightly under the simple stars, as I wrote to sleep, the owls were bearing the farm away. All the moon long, I heard, blessed among the stables, the nightjars, flying with the ricks and the horses, flashing into the dark. And then to awake, and the farm, like a wanderer, white with the dew, came back. The cock on his shoulder, it was all shining. It was Adam and Maiden. The sky gathered again and the sun grew round that very day. So it must have been after the birth of the simple light in the first spinning place. The spellbound horses walking warm out of the whinnying green stable onto the fields of praise. And honored among foxes and pheasants by the gay house, under the new-made clouds, and happy as the heart was long in the sun, born over and over, I ran my heedless ways, my wishes, raced through house-high hay, and nothing I cared. At my sky-blue trades, that time allows, in all his tuneful turning, so few and such morning songs, before the children, green and golden, follow him out of grace. Nothing I cared in the lamb-white days, that time would take me up to the swallow-thronged loft by the shadow of my hand, in the moon that is always rising, nor that riding to sleep, I should hear him fly with the high fields, and wake to the farm, forever fled the childless land. Oh, as I was young and easy in the mercy of his means, time held me green and dying, though I sang in my chains like the sea. And that was Fern Hill by Dylan Thomas. As I said, this poem means a great deal to me because it reminds me of growing up in Western North Carolina during the 1950s. Which is only a few years after Dylan Thomas wrote Fern Hill in 1945 at the end of World War II. Do you think it's true that things are more complicated for us now than in the 1950s? I think maybe so, mostly because information zips around all the time and we are absorbing a great deal of information in a way that didn't happen when I was growing up. Wouldn't say the time was more innocent because it was at the end of World War II. All of the soldiers had returned. My father returned from the war in 1945. I was born in 1949. So things were complicated. Things, however, were rather quiet. And as a child growing up in Western North Carolina, out in the country, the simplicity of my youth seemed quite apparent everywhere I turned, and I wasn't old enough, nor did I really care enough to think about the complexity of nature. All I knew was that I was running through the hay fields high as the house. The gardens were rich, and everything seemed simple to me. The pine trees in the front yard that ran along the lane, Mr. Stevens' pasture across the way where his horse stood, fellow that came by in the summertime to mow the fields behind the house. The apple trees behind our house lined up, probably planted in the 30s. The apples weren't that great from those apple trees, and each apple tree had a different kind of apple on it. I remember that. But as a boy, I would go down and play under the apple trees. There was the large barn my grandfather built behind his house. There was a compost pile next to the barn and just below the barn, underneath the trees. And beyond the trees, a field my grandfather plowed every spring. And in the fall, when the harvest came, my grandmother would can what she picked from the garden. She would put her canning in the basement, and all winter long, she would serve it for Sunday dinner or whatever else she felt like. Same thing was true for my father and my mother. I remember having gardens when I was growing up. The garden my grandfather planted, the garden my father planted. And now I understand why Dylan Thomas thought the hay fields were as high as the house, because when I was little, I was very short, so anything was higher than me. Corn towered over me. I always thought the reason it grew so high was to give the wind a place to go. Truth be told, I don't think the corn was thinking all that much about what the wind was up to. While Fern Hill reminds me of my childhood, it also suggests to me that every child desires this kind of freedom. The freedom to run, the freedom to play, the freedom to be imaginative, the freedom to be unconcerned about what comes next, the feet bare in the stream, the sun on the skin, the delight in the voice, the butterflies on the bushes in the springtime, colorful, beautiful butterflies, children everywhere, no matter what age it is, thrive on this. And guess what? Even to this day, I thrive on it. Yesterday, I spent a great deal of time watching butterflies on red flowers, the bushes all abloom just outside the door, right here at Lake Eden in mid-spring. Another reason why I'm attracted to Fern Hill is because it's been with me a long time, and it was one of the first poems I fully memorized with the intention of performing it in a meaningful storytelling kind of way. By June of 1985, I had been working on a business called Poetry Alive. I've talked about this business before on this show. Poetry Alive was basically a theater company. The idea behind it: memorize poems from the school textbooks, perform them as theater for the school students, go into the classrooms afterwards, do follow-ups, and teach the students how to do a deeper dive study into poetry by performing and memorizing poems rather than just reading them silently on the page. So in June of 1985, I'd already been working on the ideas around Poetry Alive, and I'd been memorizing a goodly number of poems and had already done a few shows. That said, Fern Hill had always attracted me. I had always wanted to memorize it, not because I really wanted to perform it for the school students. I wanted to memorize it because I was drawn to the idea, not of the youthful, childlike sensibilities. I was drawn to the idea of how quickly the stream flows fast and how it pulls us along through time and takes us closer and closer to our final moments after the decades have passed. I chose France for two reasons. One, I wanted to go to Paris and visit a good buddy of mine whom I'd known for quite a while, even in 1985. His name's John Van Hasselt, and he was living at 38 Rue Dauphine in Paris. I was 35 years old. I had just graduated from UNCA in Asheville. I'd been an adult returning student. I went back to college in my early 30s and took theater, international relations, and French. Those were the three categories that I studied when I was in school from 1981 to 1985. So when I graduated in 1985, I treated myself to a six-week trip to France. I thought, I'll go, I'll speak some French. I've been studying French for 4 years. I should be really good at it. Ha ha. Guess what? I got there and didn't understand a word, but I did have a background in it. So it was useful. And I picked it up as I went along, still studying it to this day. I'm still a very, very good advanced beginner. I don't think I've ever progressed past that. Some people think, oh, you can really speak French. I say, no, no. If I'm in France, people know I'm definitely an advanced beginner. Doesn't really matter. The point is, I enjoy the idea of having a second language in my life, and French is the one that I chose. As I traveled to Paris, I carried a little poetry book with me, thinking, well, I'll go visit my friend John for 2 weeks. Then I will take a four-week trip just wandering and walking around France, which I did. After spending 2 weeks with John in Paris, I caught a train to Cannes and started walking north. And as I was walking north, I noticed all of the little villages and the trees and the things that trail with daisies and barley, and I meandered around. But I will say, after about 4 or 5 days of walking, I got kind of tired of it, really, really tired, and thought, this is not working. I turned to the thing that I knew best, which was hitchhiking. I had done a lot of hitchhiking in the States when I was much younger, in my 20s, so I knew what it meant to put the thumb out. So I just thought, well, why not? So with my little poetry book in hand and my pack on my back, I stuck my thumb out. Some guy in a fast car, he was a soldier, I believe, was going somewhere to see his family down south. So the guy just turns and takes off and meanders around, and I didn't really care where he went. All I cared was I would ride with him until I didn't ride with him anymore, and that's exactly what I did. After he let me out, I walked a bit more, caught a couple of more rides. Finally, night came. I found a little spot underneath a tree, rolled out my sleeping bag, went to sleep, woke up the next day, and off I went. The idea I had while I was walking was to get up in the morning, feel the vibe of the road, and follow the vibe in respect to the direction that I chose. So if it felt like today I go left, I went left. The next day, if it feels like I need to go right, I'll go right. So whatever the feeling was, that was the choice that I made. Sometimes I backtracked. And of course, the backtracking didn't last long because when you backtrack, you're actually going in a new direction, even if it's on the same road. So as I meandered around hitchhiking and looking at France, I had my poetry book. It was the only book I had. As I said, in June, the days are quite long. The sun lasts a long time. The nights don't last all that long. So my camping out time, sleeping under the trees, started around 10 p.m. And by the time 4 o'clock, 4:30 rolled around, it was daylight again. So I was up quite a bit. There was a lot of light. So sometimes I would stop long before the sun went down and just sit under the tree and read the poetry book and think about things and jot things down in my journal. In fact, I'm actually holding the journal that I wrote in just now, today. I'm looking at it. It's a bit scruffy, it's a bit hard to read, and it is indeed old. And yet, here it is, right now, the very same journal I carried with me when I was walking around in France in 1985. I did this for 2 weeks. I was getting a little tired of hitchhiking. I was really kind of bored. How about that? All the romantic meandering around France, and here I was bored. Although I was meeting people, spending the night in different locations, having cheese and bread and wine and coffee in the morning at the different cafes, I was still thinking, I need a little more stimulation. So one day, 2 weeks into this journey, walking around and hitchhiking, a car stops. Young fellow was driving. His mother was in the front seat. I hopped in. Even though they were French, they could speak English. The woman, the mother, was very excited because she was going to a Tibetan Buddhist center, and she wanted to know if I would like to come along with her. I said, well, when are you going? She said, we're headed there right now. If you like, you can come. I can introduce you to the people. They have places to stay, not all that expensive, lots of food. It's very relaxing. It's very beautiful. I thought, fantastic. She went on and on and on about the organic food. And I thought, oh, this just sounds absolutely delicious. Not only the food, but the idea. So a couple of hours later, we arrived at the Tibetan Buddhist Center. She parks her car, gets out, introduces me to a few members of the staff. And everybody says, welcome, glad you're here. If you'd like to spend a few days with us, we'll be happy to have you. The cost of the lodging is, I think it was about $5 a night, U.S. money. To be fair to the lodging, it was a dorm-like room with mattresses on the floor, and I had to share it with other people. But I didn't mind. I was a bit lonely, and I thought it was great. So I put my sleeping bag down, had some chai, started visiting with the folks in the ashram. The Tibetan lamas were coming. One fellow named Kempo Rinpoche came, and he was a fellow that had been living in some area in India, escaped Tibet, was a teacher. In fact, I still get emails to this day. The fellow is still alive. He's in an ashram somewhere in New York. He's in his 80s, and he's still doing everything that he was doing back when I met him in 1985. He was much younger then, as I was, and we had a great time. I remember I had memorized the cremation of Sam McGee. Now, this guy couldn't speak French. He couldn't speak English. The only thing he could say was, I go America. America, very good place. I go America. And he rolled his R's. It didn't matter. He wanted to hear me recite the cremation of Sam McGee, which I did for him. He had no idea what I was doing, but he paid very, very close attention. Maybe he was reading my aura. Maybe he was reading my energy. So we would go downhill from the Tibetan Buddhist Center to this little area, little village. And the village had one cafe, and we would sit around in the cafe and just talk about life. Again, the time was more innocent. It was 1985. It was a bit of a distance from when Dylan Thomas wrote Fern Hill in 1945. And yet, my goodness, sometimes time stands still in these country areas. And it could have been any time frame, 1920 or now. I imagine if you go to that area, which was the south of France, you'll find villages that are unchanged, even though the modern times are here. So there we sat at the cafe, or we hung out in the courtyard, or we had coffee and tea at the little canteen. And there was a cat that we called the flying cat. And the reason why we called it the flying cat was because it jumped from rafter to rafter. And even to this day, I still have a photograph of that flying cat. So those memories are still quite strong for me, influential, which brings me back around to Fern Hill. Time held me green and dying, though I sang in my chains like the sea. So we are always young and always green, and yet even in our greenness and in our youthfulness, we are dying. Does time actually hold us? Or is time just something that surrounds us, that we exist in as we move through what we call life? I don't know, but the rhythm of Fern Hill reminded me of that movement, of the way the streams flow, of the way the wind blows. The corn so high, I'm sure it only grew to give the wind a place to go. The youthfulness. I bring all this up because, as I said, I went to visit my friend John Van Hasselt, who was living on 38 Rue Dauphine. It was the first time I had been to 38 Rue Dauphine in Paris. It's the first time I had visited John in Europe, although we had gone to school together at Brevard College, not too far from Asheville, North Carolina, in Brevard, North Carolina. We'd gone to school together 1968 through 70. John was the only exchange student. He was Dutch fellow. He came to Brevard College because, as it turned out, many years later, I learned that was the only place he could get in. And yet Brevard was very excited about it, the administration, because they had a European fellow coming, and he was going to show up, and he was going to put some dazzle onto the campus. At the time, Brevard Junior College was a two-year school, and it was strongly religious, Methodist school. We went to class 6 days a week, went to chapel on Wednesday, and had to go to Sunday service on Sundays. And yet John, he wasn't so much a religious fellow as he was a budding revolutionary hippie. We were all teenagers in early 20s, and I guess everybody is somewhat budding and revolutionary in their own way during that time frame. I hope they are. And if you're in that time frame right now, I hope that's where you land. We certainly thought we were. I was the country boy. John was the fellow from Europe. We connected. I think I've told a bit of this story on this show before. We connected. We became good friends. John showed me, by way of the things that he was doing, skiing, climbing, speaking more than one language, taking photographs, curious about the world, talking about what was going on all over the place in America. 1968 through 70, this was the time of the Cultural Revolution, the time of Woodstock, the time of the counterculture, the time of the hippies, the time of free love and peace. I really desperately wanted to be involved in all of that. I didn't realize at the time that I wasn't as well suited to be a hippie, a counterculture person, as I thought I was. I learned later that a lot of the counterculture movement, a lot of what people were doing back then, was more about conformity. than it was about being different and alternative, even though it seemed alternative because it was quite different than what was going on in mainstream culture, 50s and 60s, Leave It to Beaver kind of stuff that was going on television. It was quite different, and it was revolutionary in many ways, and it was quite dramatic. I mean, all you have to do is look at some of the Woodstock photographs, and you see the vast numbers of people who were dressed very differently than their mothers and their fathers. And yet, vast numbers of people dressed differently. If you look more closely, you will see they were dressed all alike, more or less. So the conformity of the 50s they were rebelling against, my group rebelling against, became the conformity of the 60s and the 70s, which later led into the New Age consciousness movement, and some of that's still here to this day. It did set the tone for how we are functioning in American culture, in Western culture to this day. But at the time, when I ran across John in the 60s, late 60s, 68 through 70, I didn't really understand what was going on culturally, although I was attuned to it. I felt ignorant, and ignorance is a really good thing, because when you're ignorant, you can blame yourself, or you can use your ignorance as a field sign for learning. So that's what I did. I started reading Time magazine and Newsweek and other periodicals. I wanted to get up on things. So John inspired me to do all of that. We became pretty good friends at Brevard College. And then after the Brevard College days were over, John moved on. That was 1970. He went to Mexico, then started traveling around the world, taking photographs, doing what he would continue to do all his life, which was be an international photojournalist. The guy has, to this day, 12,000 images on Getty. You can look it up. John Kopis Van Hasselt, his images are on Getty. It's amazing at all the stuff that he did over the years. But in 1970, we parted ways. Off he went. And 15 years later, in 1985, I knew he was living in Paris. And I thought, well, what better thing to do than to reconnect with my buddy John in Paris? So that's exactly what happened. I sent a postcard. He said, oh, come, here's my address, 38 Rue Dauphine. I'll be there on this day. Catch a flight, come over. We can hang around. So that's exactly what I did with my little poetry book in 1985, after I graduated from UNCA. I hopped on an Icelandic flight, I think. I don't really remember. I believe we flew out of Greensboro. The flight went out of Greensboro, North Carolina. Long and short, I went to Paris. I walked up the flights of stairs to the sixth floor, which was the very top, to John's little apartment. I knocked on the door, and when he opened the door, we picked up where we had left off 15 years earlier, as if no time had ever passed. Went down to the local cafe, Le Bussy, it was called, and we had some sandwiches, we drank some beers, reminisced, talked, carried on, which went on into the evening. And as it turned out, John's neighborhood, the 6th arrondissement, was the place where all the Bohemians were gathering. And John knew everybody in the neighborhood. So after the first day, I'd met a bunch of John's friends, and I was feeling rather European, even though I'd never been to Europe before, never been to Paris before. But even so, I fancied myself that. So here we are back to Fern Hill, time taking me up to the Swallow Throng loft by the shadow of its hand in the moon that is always rising. Our moons were rising and our suns were setting and things were moving along. And there I was at John's place, 38 Rue Dauphine, and in the neighborhood. Now, the reason this is interesting for me is because at the time, I had no idea how influential Rue Dauphine and John's apartment would be for me. I did not know then that I would return to that place year after year after year over a 30-year stretch. And in fact, 2 weeks from now, I'm headed back to Paris. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, last year when I was there, John moved from 38 Rue Dauphine, and he decamped, and he's over in a brand new place now. not too far from the neighborhood, but still out of the neighborhood. So that era closed for us, and that closed last year. But in that arc of the 30 years, I went back to Paris so many times I completely lost count, developed a great deal of friends there. It wasn't a romantic town for me, like I love Paris in the springtime or April in Paris, even though Paris has a lot of romance. It became a home for me in the same way that Dylan Thomas wrote about, oh, when I was young and easy under the apple boughs about the lilting house and happy as the grass was green, the night above the dingle starry. I love that line, the night above the dingle starry, because the stars are always there and the night is always above it, and it always goes on black after black after black, and you look out forever into the shining stars, and yet it also at night remains night, even though the stars penetrate the blackness. So there we were, 1985, down at Le Bussy. The cafe is still there. We moved down the street to another cafe called Bar de Marché, and they rebranded Bar de Marché about 6 years ago, and the sign out front now says BDM forever. It's all in English. So we are back in modern times. But when I was walking around in France in 1985, memorizing Fern Hill, sitting there at the Tibetan Buddhist Center, I had no concept of where my life would go. Now, the reason I'm talking about this now is because so often when I was in France, I would think about how time was slipping away. I would think about how the shadows in the swallow thronged loft were coming back and back, and the cock was returning on the shoulder of the wanderer every morning, and how time was spinning along. And as I was thinking about how time moves and we grow older, I kept coming back to a popular tune that I knew when I was a boy, played on the radio, hit the top charts for a while. You've probably heard the song before. It's titled Those Were the Days. Most people know the song because it was made popular by Mary Hopkins in 1968. Most people don't know that it was originally a Russian song composed in the early 1920s. The music was written by Boris Forman, and the lyrics were written by Konstantin Podrevsky. The reason Mary Hopkins enjoyed the hit was because of the refrain. You are probably familiar with the refrain, and you probably sung it many times. It's very light, it's very lively, a bit joyous, and it goes like this. Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose, we'd fight and never lose, for we were young and sure to have our way. One of the reasons why that refrain became so popular was because it was lively and you could dance to it. You probably remember the tune. What's interesting to me about Those Were the Days and how that ties to my experiences in Paris over 30 years, and how it really ties to Fern Hill by Dylan Thomas, when I was young and easy, we were young and sure to have our way. In the youthful times, we don't think much about how quickly time passes up to the swallow thronged loft in the shadow that is always rising, because the shadow is always rising. So the song, Those Were the Days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. It always seems like that. So when I think about the Bar de Marché, and I think about Rue Dauphine, and think about all of the good times I had in Paris, and think about all of the times I've had throughout my life, many, many, many memorable experiences. Been some rough patches too, no doubt. Even so, memorable experiences throughout my life. And yet always thinking somewhere in the back of my mind that time was moving on. But it was okay. We were young, and we were sure to have our way. Now, when I went to the Bar de Marché and to Le Bussy and to the Paris neighborhood, I was in my 30s. I wasn't really young. I was 36, 37, 38 is a military retirement. So it's not like I was a kid wandering around. And yet, that song, especially the refrain, kept ringing in my head. The reason why was because the song is about the passage of time. It's about dreams, trying to achieve dreams, and regrets, and yet still holding on to the friendships that you develop over the long haul, just like John and I developed in Paris over the long haul, among all the other friends that I made along the way in the neighborhood. And most of the time, we would overlap at the Bar de Marché. And as we were overlapping at the Bar de Marché, we could see each time that we were getting a little older, our stories were changing. Michel was moving to Belgium. Somebody else moved to Africa. Somebody else moved to Austin, Texas. John remained the same there on Rue Dauphine at 38 Rue Dauphine. And the Bar de Marché remained the same. And I was in the Bar de Marché last year. And the place looks exactly the same as it did 15 years ago. The people have changed. Occasionally somebody I know walks through or walks past. Sometimes they stop, sometimes they don't. Maybe we recognize each other, maybe we don't. So here's the full song, Those Were the Days. And when you hear the song, I'll not sing it, I'll just recite it. When you hear it, you will recognize the time transitions, and you might find yourself reflecting on where you are in that timeline. So here it is. It begins like this. Once upon a time, there was a tavern where we used to raise a glass or two. Remember how we laughed away the hours and dreamed of all the great things we would do? Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose. We'd fight and never lose. For we were young and sure to have our way. Then the busy years went rushing by us. We lost our starry notions on the way. If by chance I'd see you in the tavern, we'd smile at one another and we'd say, those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose. We'd fight and never lose. For we were young and sure to have our way. Just tonight I stood before the tavern. Nothing seemed the way it used to be. In the glass I saw a strange reflection. Was that lonely man really me? Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose. We'd fight and never lose, for we were young and sure to have our way. Through the door there came a familiar laughter. I saw your face and heard you call my name. Oh, my friend, we're older, but no wiser, for in our hearts the dreams are still the same. Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose. We'd fight and never lose. For we were young and sure to have our way. And that was the song, Those Were the Days, My Friends. Like I said, Mary Hopkins made it popular in 1968. And the refrain kept the thing going. La, 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 la. That's what most people remember. When I paid attention to those lyrics, and when I thought about walking by the Bar de Marché and other places I've been as well, but I do focus on Rue Dauphine because that's the place I've returned to so many times, and of all the places I've been in my life, that spot remains the most constant one in my adult existence. I'm going back in a couple of weeks to visit John. I had a conversation with John a couple of days ago, and one of the reasons why this song is poignant for me and the time in my life is strong and powerful and pulling me along is because I, like the people around me, can feel the decades. We feel them in positive ways, and we feel them in the heavier ways, like, gee, I can't quite move like I once did. If you are young and you're listening to this and you maybe are thinking, gee, I've got a long way to go until I get there, you are absolutely right. And because of that, it's probably quite wise for you to go to your metaphorical bar de marché or wherever it is, the top of the mountain, the depths of the sea, the adventure you always dream of. Probably wise for you to go ahead and do that now rather than to dilly-dally around and wait. I spoke with John, as I said. John now has Parkinson's disease. He's still doing okay. Tick-tock, tick-tock, though. The time is moving on. I'm going to see John because who knows how much longer he will last. Who knows how much longer you will last? I have no idea how long I will last, but I do know right now, in this moment, I'm here, I'm alive, you're here, you're alive wherever you are in the world. It's springtime in the Northern Hemisphere, springtime in Western North Carolina. And yet, time is ticking and time is passing. Here we come back to Fern Hill by Dylan Thomas. Oh, when I was young and easy under the apple boughs. Young and easy under the apple boughs. Back in Western North Carolina when I was young and easy under the apple boughs. I'm still under the apple boughs. I'm still easy. I'm just not as young as I once was. And moving a bit into claiming your territory around where you are and what you're up to. I was at Odd's Cafe yesterday, yet another cafe. Odd's Cafe on Haywood Road in West Asheville is not the Bar de Marché on Rue de Seine in Paris. And yet the gathering sensibility is similar. People were there yesterday working on their computers, writing their poetry, reading their books, having their conversations. The traffic was passing outside. The air was flowing through the room. I was there to meet a friend of mine for an afternoon coffee. He arrived around 4 o'clock. Good to see him. All was fine. We started talking as we tend to do about philosophy and art and politics and how things are in the world. And somehow he got on to this notion of his age. Now, he's in his late 70s, I think, maybe even 80. He's fit. He's happy. Nothing wrong with being in your late 70s and in your 80s. And yet he said to me, I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. He looked right at me, a man in his 70s, late 70s, saying to me, I don't know what I'll do when I grow up. And I had a response to that. I said, have you looked in the mirror lately? You have fully grown up. There's no child left. You're fully mature. I suggested to him, instead of saying you want to be an eternal child, why not take the maturity that you have as an adult and use that maturity to appreciate the childlike sensibilities that you have buried in your memories. And I mean buried in the best sense of being lodged there, not buried as invisible, but the sensibilities for delight, for joy, for the opportunity of breath, for the opportunity of interacting with people. So when I think about Fern Hill by Dylan Thomas and how you move out of your childhood, or when I think about those were the days, my friends, and we were young and sure to have our way, I'm thinking about all of the childlike sensibilities that we have that move us forward in our lives. And poetry speaks to it very, very well. And I've always loved the poetics of things because somehow the poetry gets to it in a way that other things don't. And so on that note, let's turn to a poem that I think I may have read before on this show. It's titled, There Was a Child Went Forth by Walt Whitman. I performed it many times for school students around the country back in the days when I was touring. And it speaks to the movement of time. It speaks to the child within us. And this is what I was trying to explain to my friend. We will grow old. We will go out in the world. And if we have a good, long, solid life, or any kind of life at all, we will not remain a child. And yet we can have the childlike sensibilities. And this is what this poem is talking about. It's titled, "There Was a Child Went Forth Every Day," which is the first line of the poem. So I'll read it to you. You'll get a sense of what I mean. And when I'm reading it, think about how you go forth every day. What is your Fern Hill like? Do you have a tavern or a cafe or a local you go to? Do you appreciate the friends you have there? Are you writing about it? Are you letting your imagination play around with it? What are you doing that will create those enduring memories that one day maybe will motivate you to reflect like I'm reflecting now, sitting here in this room overlooking the Western North Carolina springtime? There was a child went forth every day, and the first object he looked upon and received with wonder or pity or love or dread, that object he became. And that object became part of him for the day, or a certain part of the day, or for many years, or stretching cycles of years. The early lilacs became part of this child, and grass, and white and red morning glories, and white and red clover, and the song of the Phoebe bird, and the March-born lambs, and the sow's pink faint litter, and the mare's foal, and the cow's calf, and the noisy brood of the barnyard, or by the mire of the pond side, and the fish, suspending themselves so curiously below there, and the beautiful, curious liquid, and the water plants with their graceful flat heads, all became part of him, and the field sprouts of April and May became part of him, winter grain sprouts, and those of the light yellow corn, and of the esculent roots of the garden, and the apple trees covered with blossoms, and the fruit afterward, and wood berries, and the commonest weeds by the road, and the old drunkard staggering home from the outhouse of the tavern whence he had lately risen, and the schoolmistress that passed on her way to school, and the friendly boys that passed, and the quarrelsome boys, and the tidy fresh-cheeked girls, and the barefoot boy and girl, and all the changes of the city and country wherever he went, his own parents, he that fathered him, and she that conceived him in her womb and birthed him. They gave this child more of themselves than that. They gave him afterward every day. They became part of him. The mother at home, quietly placing the dishes on the supper table. The mother, with mild words, clean her cap and gown, a wholesome odor falling off her person and clothes as she walks by. The father, strong, self-sufficient, manly, mean, angered, unjust, the blow, the quick loud word, the tight bargain, the crafty lure, the family usages, the language, the company, the furniture, the yearning and swelling heart, affection that will not be gainsaid, the sense of what is real, and the thought, if after all it should prove unreal, the doubts of daytime and the doubts of nighttime, the curious whether and how, whether that which appears so, or is it all flashes and specks? Men and women crowding fast in the streets, if they are not flashes and specks, what are they? The streets themselves, and the facades of houses, the goods in the windows, vehicles, teams, the tiered wharves, and huge crossings at the ferries, the village on the highland seen from afar at sunset, the river between, shadows, aureola, and mist. Light falling on roofs and gables, white or brown, 3 miles off. The schooner nearby, sleepily dropping down the tide. The little boat slack-toed astern. The hurrying, tumbling waves and quick broken crest slapping. The strata of colored clouds, long bar of maroon tent away, solitary by itself, and the spread of purity it lies motionless in, the horizon's edge, the flying sea crow, the fragrance of salt marsh and shore mud. These became part of that child who went forth every day and who now goes and will always go forth every day. And that was Walt Whitman's poem, There Was a Child Went Forth. That's my sensibility of the childlikeness that we all have, no matter how old we are. And this is what I was telling my friend yesterday. And I think he got it. I think he understood. And when you take the responsibility of claiming who you are in the now, in this moment, and really, philosophically speaking, I suppose you can have a lot of places to land, but the now, for me, seems to be the most important spot in this moment as I'm existing. And as I exist in the now, sitting here making this show, finishing up our time together, I'm reminded that everything that I've done up to this point recording this show is now a memory. Certainly it's a sound file, and certainly when you hear it, this now moment will be no more. You will be hearing this in a brand new moment. A brand new moment, a brand new time. Never existed before. So I'll close with a poem I wrote, something to sorbet the moment before I say goodbye. And I may have mentioned that I gather every Saturday with a group of people, 12 to 1 p.m., the Imaginative Storm Writing Group, a gathering. And we generate a piece of writing in 10 minutes. I usually just let the flow happen. Don't spend too much time thinking about it. So here's one I wrote a couple of weeks ago titled Spin Easy Across the Day. Do ears forget what the body remembers? I exist not as something permanent, but as a moment inside a thought, or inside a moonbeam, or inside a whisper from a worried brow that could give you good advice about yesterday's sunrise, or what might happen after that, or what will happen right now, or what will happen tomorrow. Take me with you when you go on your next trip. I love you like the wind loves seagrass, or the sea loves the lost sailors, or home loves the sound of someone knocking. Magic comes when the sun gives you what you long for. Take smoke, mix it with 2 summer lies, and tell me what I need to know. Give me bad advice. You know what I'm talking about. The kind the blues mama gives you when she belts the night with more than the hours can stand. Give me more of that good stuff that falls out of long walks and old lovers' steady hands. Save me with your eyes. Listen. Do you hear what I hear? Listen. And there you go, my friends, a little short poem that I wrote in a 10-minute time frame. I spent more time on it than 10 minutes. I just crafted it and wrote it roughly in 10 minutes and then did spend a fair amount of time trying to get it to work for me, editing it, playing around with it, that sort of thing. If you do have a sense of wanting to generate more poetic material, we do gather every Saturday, Imaginative Storm Writing Prompt of the Week gathering. It's turned into this incredible salon about imaginative intelligence, about poetic sensibilities. We write, we generate material. We also spend about 45 minutes some of the time talking about whatever people want to talk about. Usually have 15 or 20 people on the call. I've been really surprised at how influential that weekly gathering has been for me. And it has been for other people also they report the same thing. Funny enough, I'm leaning more and more into doing these solo shows, just unpacking the thoughts that I have and sharing them with you. If you like these solo shows, you can certainly tell me about it, Nave@jamesnave.com. I would love to hear some feedback on this. Community radio is a fantastic place, and also podcasting is a fantastic place. The more feedback, the better. So what would you like? What would you like to talk about? What would you like to hear discussed? What do you feel the need to have in your life that will give your life more meaning, more value, more benefits, more of all that good juice that you want? Like the blues woman singing away the hours. I don't know what that is, but whatever it is, I would love to hear about it. If you'd be so inclined to send something my way, Nave@jamesnave.com. So on that, I'd like to thank you so much for listening to Twice 5 Miles Radio, fertile ground for conversations worth listening to and remembering. I'm your host, James Nave. We air this show every weekend, first on WPVM-FM in Asheville and KCEI-FM, Cultural Energy Radio in Taos. Devin Dial, thank you for airing it in Asheville. And Robin Collier and Mike Tilley, thank you for doing the same in Taos. I really, really do appreciate it. Walter Parks, I have you to thank for the theme song, so I'm going to do that right now. Thank you, Walter Parks, for our theme song. I really appreciate it. And like I said, if you would like to reach out to me, I would love to hear from you, Nave@jamesnave.com. And I think that's pretty much it for right now. Springtime in the Carolinas. I'm headed out west next week, so the next time I air this show, I will be in New Mexico, in Taos. How about that? Meanwhile, thanks again for tuning in. I really appreciate it, and I do hope you come back sometime soon. And until then, I'll catch you on that turnaround somewhere down the line.
This is Professor Howard Zinn. The independent, non-commercial radio station you're listening to is really important in the maintenance of democracy. Thomas Jefferson once said, an informed democracy will behave in a reasonable manner. So if you care about being informed, if you care about democracy, if you're a reasonable person, you are, of course. Please support your source for uncensored news and views and the voice of your community.
Yeah. Sunday hat. I am what I am, and that's all there is to that. And don't try to do me over. I ain't a piece of clay, no. I am what I am, and that's how I'm gonna stay. So you gotta hold me,
hold me the way I am.
Kiss me,
kiss me the way I am.
Love me, baby.
Listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. and globally at WPVMFM.org.
Well, howdy, buckaroos and buckarettes.
From Feature Story News in Brussels, I'm William Denslow. US President Donald Trump says the leaders of Israel and Lebanon could come to the White House in the next week or two as part of a ceasefire agreement. A 10-day ceasefire started, but it's unclear if the